And this is Building Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
Later on, massive demonstrations in Puerto Rico as teachers union fights austerity.
But first, the Coalition to Protect Chinatown and the Lower East Side fights de Blasio displacement plans. And we begin with listening to rally sound from a protest in front of Gracie Mansion to set the pace.
Are we going to allow de Blasio to displace that?
No! 我们要不要向这个高楼说 no?
¿Qué le decimos al plan del alcalde?
No! We are not second-class citizens. We put you in office and we can take you out!
Yeah.
Listen, this is not unique to Lower East Side in Chinatown, although that is my community and I was born and raised there. This is happening throughout New York City, everywhere, right? Where the hell do they want us to go? Name it. Chinatown, Lower East Side, everywhere, right? That's why we are together here today as a united front to call against the displacement. Mayor de Blasio, you have to hear us. All of New York City is here. Every single person that represents a community is here, right?
Yeah! Up next, we have a representative from the Coalition to Protect Chinatown and Lower East Side, David Toot.
We're here today at Gracie Mansion because enough is enough. We are fed up with this mayor.
Yeah.
Just like Mayor Bloomberg, all this guy is doing is robbing the poor to feed the rich. Since the East Village Plan was passed in 2008, the Lower East Side in Chinatown has been taken over by luxury development. Condos for the rich, hotels for tourists, bars and galleries for people with money. And for us, what do we get?
Nothing!
What do we get?
Nothing!
No, what we get is high rents. We get expensive food, no heat, no hot water, leaky bathrooms, eviction notices, harassment by our landlords, our public housing sold to developers, our senior centers shut down, school programs cut. Is that right?
No!
That's why we got together to create the Chinatown Working Group rezoning plan. We need the same height restrictions that the East Village received, so we're not pushed out. Why can't we have it? Is it because we're Latino? Is it because we're Chinese? Is it because we're black and we're working families? Is it too much to ask for equality in 2015?
No!
That's why we marched to City Hall, not just once, but twice. Even in the pouring rain, we came out, workers, senior citizens, students, mothers with babies, small business owners. We demanded that Mayor de Blasio adopt our community rezoning. And what did he say? Nothing. He didn't even bother to show his darn face when 700 of us came out and invited him out to our community to hear us. What was his response? He sent a rep down to tell us again that asking for equal protection was too ambitious. He said we need to compromise. Compromise with what? Equal protection? Hell no!
Hell no!
You're asking us to compromise the way our families and our communities, and we will not stand for it. De Blasio, many of us voted for you because you said that you would end the tale of two cities. You said you would fight for working families. But what happened? You are promoting inequality. You are destroying our communities. You are destroying our city. Don't tell us that the developers have you in your pocket. We won't stand for that. You have betrayed our trust for too long.
Yes!
That's why we call on all New Yorkers to come together. Now's our time. We need to hold our mayor accountable to us, the people. It's time to tell him, stop destroying our communities. Stop enriching the developers. Put people first, not profit first. If you refuse to stand with us and stop the displacement, we will displace you.
We will displace you.
We will displace you!
We will displace you!
We will displace you!
We will displace you!
Not.
不要!
我们也不要踏走!
Yeah!
白思豪滚蛋!
No nos moverán.
No nos moverán.
Mayor de Blasio, si usted no cambia su manera de proceder, no nos moverán.
No nos moverán.
No nos moverán.
No nos moverán.
All right, with us, we have district leader Jennifer Rajkumar. Please, everyone, I want you to scream for her. She has been with us since the beginning at our marches, at our rallies, at our town hall meeting. Please, please clap for her. She's amazing and she's with the people. Please, we're glad to have her.
You're my people. Where you go, I go. And I'm with you all the way in this fight for our community. The Chinatown Working Group rezoning plan, the community came together for 7 years to create this rezoning plan and to keep our community affordable so that future generations of families can live there to save our small businesses. And it's the right thing. So that's why I'm here standing with you, and I will stand with you every step of the way to pass that Chinatown Working Group rezoning plan. Together, we can make it happen. I am proud to be here, and I will be here with you every step of the way. Thank you.
Thank you again to Jennifer Rajkumar for coming up here with us and showing her support.
In the last 6 years, due to the East Village rezoning plan that excluded Chinatown and Lower East Side, building height from our community has no restrictions. Our community received no equal treatment. Real estate developers rushed into Chinatown to build hotels and luxury condos, like the 80-story XTEL Towers. These luxury constructions are increasing the property tax, displacing many local residents, workers, and small business owners. Many of the people who are joining the rally today are the victims of the East Village rezoning plan. Our community made great efforts in the last 6 years for the Chinatown Working Group rezoning plan. Mayor de Blasio, without any explanations, rejected the plan. When de Blasio became the mayor, he said that he will fight for the poor and the minorities. But in the last 2 years, his policies are just like Mayor Bloomberg and worse than Bloomberg. Bloomberg is like a ferocious wolf, but de Blasio is like a deceitful fox that lies to the people and destroys us. De Blasio must go!
De Blasio must go! One-term mayor!
One-term mayor! One-term mayor!
Half-term mayor! Half-term mayor!
We are here today as a united front. Although many of us are from the Lower East Side in Chinatown, this is not a Lower East Side in Chinatown unique problem. Displacement is happening everywhere. I'd like to welcome Julio Munoz from South Bronx Community Congress.
We're here to let you know that the Bronx voted down de Blasio's plan. And our organization went to the community board meetings and we let them know that any housing plan has to include us. We got the planning boards in the Bronx, all of them, to vote against his plan. We now have to hit the city council to make sure they stay with the people who voted them in. We have to make sure that they turn down this plan. This is dangerous. This is going to create more homeless people. Your rent is going to go up, and no one is going to save you unless we get involved. I'm asking today that we form a citywide alliance. A citywide alliance to make sure that they respect us, that they respect the people who put him in. Thank you very much.
We will be back!
We will be back!
I want Brooklyn to hear us! We will be back!
We will be back!
We'll be back here again next Wednesday. Same place, same time. Who's coming back?
We will not be moved.
Not a single one of us. We will not be moved.
We will not be moved.
We will not be moved.
大家要不要再回来？ 大家把你手上荧光棒举起来， 如果你要回来。 很冷啊， 谁让我们这么冷的天站在这里啊？ 我们要不要再回来？ 我们要不要帮助唐人街？
No nos moverán!
No nos moverán! No nos moverán! No nos moverán!
So from chants in Mandarin, in Spanish, in English, the at least 200 people who gathered in front of Gracie Square Mansion to say, hell no, we won't go. We do not want to be dislocated and dislodged from the communities we have lived in and we have helped to build. So we are very pleased now to have two of the organizers of that rally, the sound of which you've been listening to, Wendy Chung, member of the Coalition to Protect Chinatown and the Lower East Side and Chinese Staff and Workers Association, and Sophie Di Benetto, who is with the Lower East Side and National Mobilization Against Sweatshops as well. And I want to start, because we were doing that while we were listening to the sound, I want to bait for a moment, Sophie. Goodness, who creates housing but developers? What are we to do in a poor city other than to use tax credits and tax dollars and really prop up developers to build high-rise housing in our neighborhoods, lest they deteriorate further? What's wrong with that scenario? And welcome to WBAI, Sophie.
Thank you. Thanks for having us. I think that's a very popular question, right? If we don't work with these developers to build luxury high-rises, how are we going to build more housing? People need housing. But it's not true that that is the only way to build more low-income housing. Our communities, Lower East Side and Chinatown, have been organizing for 6 or 7 years at this point around our own rezoning plan that came out of the community. And our plan has provisions in it that answer exactly that question. How can we build more housing that is not just affordable according to the city, but actually affordable for the low-income and working families that have built this community and that make this community? How can we support small businesses so that they can actually thrive? How can we provide schools and senior centers and parks and green space? It's possible, and we have one such solution that our mayor is currently ignoring and refusing to pass and refusing to seriously look at. We actually even had met with and spoken with one developer who agreed to build 100% low-income housing on Spura, which is the Seward Park urban renewal area, down on Delancey Street. So this idea that the only way to build more housing is to build luxury high-rises is just completely not true.
I also want to add on to Sophie's statement and to address Mimi's...
And that, of course, is Wendy Chung.
...question is that we want development for whom is the main question. And we are not against development, but we want development that's for this community. And right now, the development that's being imposed by this administration across the city is not for the people in the community. It's actually for developers. It's for developers, and it's not going to address the real needs and concerns of the community, not only from housing, but also schools, small businesses, all the services that make up a community. So when we talk about displacement, these are all the things that are part of it. And that's why the Chinatown Working Group rezoning plan in the past 7 years that we've worked on it is so critical and is actually a solution. But instead of this administration passing this plan, he's ignoring us. And he thinks that that is why this past Wednesday we had a rally in front of Gracie Mansion. It was on the front page of AM New York Today, is because hundreds of people are coming out citywide, are fired up, are pissed off, because our housing, our communities are being eradicated in front of us, and we've had it. We're not going to take it anymore, and Chinatown Lower East Side is a community that's taking a stand, and we're encouraging people from across the city to also come out together to do this together.
Could you fill in the links between the development or overdevelopment as it is and displacement, gentrification? What is the relation between the two of them? And what in the plan would prevent that?
And maybe if I can just add a little addendum to that, the mayor's major concerted effort citywide is what they are calling, he is calling, which is a continuation of really the plan of Mr. Bloomberg before him, inclusionary zoning. That's one thing. And the other is to take developers, give them tax credits in what they are, 421A buildings, where there will be set aside of a small number of the otherwise market rate units for really middle-income people. They certainly won't be affordable, in quote, to low-income people. So along with, and just to punctuate Ken's question, what's different in your plan that is not dependent upon that very same formula?
I want to address that question, but I also want to say de Blasio came into office on the promise of stopping the Tale of Two Cities. You know, this is what he was, he came in, people elected him for this. And so in our community, we came up with the Chinatown Working Group plan. It came out of initially a people first rezoning plan that was developed in Chinatown Lower East Side. And the specific plan is that it calls for a special district zoning in Chinatown and Lower East Side. What is special about this zoning is that in 2008, when the East Village was protected, the predominantly white middle class area in the East Village, thousands of people came out to say, why is it that our community cannot have equal treatment? And so because the Chinatown and Lower East Side were not protected.
Wendy, so you're saying another area was given that protection, mm-hmm. unlike
yes.
Chinatown district.
Right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the East Village was protected, but at the expense of Chinatown and Lower East Side. And that actually pushed all the development into our area. And so now we see a proliferation of hotels, luxury developments, condos, loss of schools, things that are not beneficial to the people in our community.
86-story Excel
Tower. Exactly.
Thank you. It's a monster, too.
Yes.
Yeah,
really.
And of course, Ken lives right near there. So.
Well, not that close, but I was at one of your demonstrations there.
Right. So we've had several demonstrations in front of the Excel development, which is going to be an 80-story luxury tower, a poor door development, something that de Blasio himself said he was against, the poor door policy. But here, instead, he is promoting racism. It's promoting racism, not just in Excel, but by not passing the Chinatown Working Group plan that is going to protect our community from the mass displacement. For example, the Chinatown Working Group plan includes height limits for all of Chinatown and the Lower East Side, so including public housing in all the areas that are encompassed. And I think what is really important about this plan is also that it encompasses Chinatown and the Lower East Side. Instead of letting the city divide our communities, initially, the Chinatown Working Group was set up to say, you know, just protect Chinatown. But we knew, you know, along with NMAS and the people in our community, we will not allow us to be divided again. Because that's how the city is, both in our local city council, but also the de Blasio wants to play off the differences in the community. But we united despite the divisions and came up with this plan that has height protections, protections for public housing, so that in the future, none of the public housing will continue to stay low income, unlike de Blasio pushing forward the infill that is continuing the legacy of Bloomberg. And so I think this plan...
Let me just stop you because, first of all, just want to go back and say NMAS, for those who may not yet be in the know, is the National Mobilization Against Sweatshops. And the infill is literally taking public housing property. It could be a daycare center built there. It could be a playground. It could be a parking lot or whatever small amenities exist in between the buildings and creating sliver buildings for a much higher income people. That's what you're talking about when you say infill.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
And I know that one of the things that, as Wendy just recaptures some of her thoughts there, the issue that Sophie had wanted to bring up, and we're going to work our way back to the problems with this, but going forward is the idea, and we really haven't had a mass housing movement for a long, long time in the city. We certainly did come together to try to protect and extend the rent laws, but a cohesive, solid, sustainable movement is something we've been lacking. And of course, we are losing both low-income housing, we are losing rent-stabilized housing, we are losing public housing units and possibly public housing in general. And we are losing our communities. So, Sophie, you wanted to particularly elaborate on the need for coming together while not losing some of the autonomous features of our respective neighbors and neighborhoods, really.
Yeah, I think that if you look around at the communities that are going to be upzoned by de Blasio's proposal, it's, you know, East New York, it's East Harlem, it's Crown Heights. What are these communities, if not historically communities of color and low-income communities? And when you upzone, it's basically like a magnet for luxury development. It kind of attracts these developers to come in, build luxury high-rises, which drives up rents around the neighborhood, drives out small businesses, you know, drives out working families, people of color. And what is that plan, if not racist? And I think we in Chinatown and the Lower East Side have been fighting for years now against exactly this kind of targeted luxury development and displacement. And as a consequence of that, as a consequence of our organizing and having united people, we do have one solution. We have one alternative, which is the Chinatown Working Group rezoning plan. But we need to come together around the city because it's all of our communities that are being displaced and destroyed right now. We must unite and we must really put the heat on de Blasio, who pledged to end the Tale of Two Cities, to hold him to that so that all of our communities can have a say in the kind of development that occurs, so that that development is for the people of those communities, and so that all other neighborhoods can kind of come out and pass similar plans or rezoning that also protects them from displacement and encourages the kind of development that's good for the community. So we're absolutely now calling on people around the city, organizations around the city, all other neighborhoods to come together and join us. We're actually this Wednesday, so the day after tomorrow, going to be back at Gracie Mansion picketing from 4 to 6. We'll be joined by several other groups from other communities in the Bronx, Queens, Harlem, and we want to make that an open invitation. We want to start or build, really, since I know other communities are speaking out, but really build on this citywide movement for community control of development.
What time is that?
4 to 6 p.m. at Gracie Mansion this Wednesday.
And for those of us who have not yet been invited to the barbecue there, where is Gracie Mansion?
Gracie Mansion is at 88th Street and East End Avenue, and we know it's close to the holidays. And we really do want to...
What better time?
Exactly.
The Upper East Side.
The Upper East Side, exactly. Yeah. So we want to highlight, right? Like, this is so
exactly
critical that we are coming out even this close to Christmas to take a stand for our communities. And if everyone joins us, maybe we can make it fun. Sing some carols
city,
or who knows.
Our city.
Exactly.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the word affordable.
Sure.
Because de Blasio and his aides keep on saying, we want affordable housing, and that's what this is be doing. But as we know, affordable can mean a whole lot of different things to different people, which is why I always put it in, quote, affordable, end quote. So do you want to critique the de Blasio plan as to what is affordable and what would be different in your plan?
So absolutely. When the city says affordable, they take a look at the income of the entire metropolitan area, including, I believe, parts of Westchester. So when you shake out what's affordable from looking at all of those communities, what comes down is absolutely not affordable to low-income people. And our plan says that when you are determining what is affordable or what is low-income housing, you are looking at what is affordable to the people of the community in which you are building. So we don't want just quote-unquote, like you say, affordable housing according to the definition currently of the city. We want low-income housing for low-income communities.
And of course, I want housing for people who are on fixed income, people who are disabled, people who are elderly, people who indeed have no incomes at this juncture, etc. But you are doing two things that is really quite revolutionary in the scheme of things. One of them is suggesting that communities and the people who reside therein have a fundamental role in planning for the development. And I want you to talk more about that. And then the other thing that you seem to be suggesting is that we don't need the tax dollars to aid, abet, and support developers, hedge fund or other developers, in order to get low-income housing built. And if you could address those two points, and if we could do it in the next minutes that we have. And of course, this is a continuing, ongoing discussion, and we'll see you all Wednesday at Gracie Mansion for that continuing discussion.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, in brief, I think it's an important question, kind of what you were touching on, like who do we want low-income housing for? And I think what we've really seen is that when you stop luxury development, when you stop rising rents, when you build low-income housing for a low-income community, that has the effect of maintaining and building up like a thriving community of low-income people, of middle-income people, you know, of a diverse and kind of interesting cross-section of folks in New York City. So when we say we want more low-income housing, I think it's going to have almost like a trickle-up effect of creating communities in which, you know, working families and middle-income folks can also find a space and can thrive as well. And that is something that we want all communities around the city to be able to build, to have a say in the kind of development that happens in their community.
I'm just going to interrupt you long enough to get there. There's always been one conceptual reality for the many, many years that I've been involved in housing-based issues. Now, wait a minute. Too many poor people concentrated together dooms communities to degenerate. It's not just that the services disappear because of external forces. There is something in the DNA of poverty. There's something in the DNA of immigrant communities and so on that do not allow them to thrive and develop. Now, oh my God, help debunk that terrible mythology, which is really strategic to the kind of insertion of sliver buildings in public housing complexes and these otherwise upscale, up-income developments that are really a proponent of this administration. It's not just a financing scheme. There's an ideological sway that's there. Too many poor people are not good for our neighborhoods. What do you think, Joe? I was going to say Joanne Lum. Sorry, Joanne Lum, Wendy, but I had this discussion with Joanne Lum, who is also a major organizer with these folks in these incredibly important demonstrations that are happening.
I think that's a really good point and a good question, is because our community, Chinatown and Lower East Side, has been so vibrant and thriving for such a long time. But who is it? Has it been thriving for? It's been thriving for the people in the community who built it, who worked there. Now we see not only a loss of housing, I think there's a misconception also that this movement is just jobs, the loss of schools, everything that makes it a community, which we have had that in Chinatown and Lower East Side. It's a really mixed community. And the fact that now de Blasio is coming in and saying that, you know, this is not good. We're going to clean the community, meaning clean out the people in this community. I think that is exactly why we're going after, you know, de Blasio needs to step down, is because he thinks the people in this community is not worth it and he's not holding up to his end of the people who put him in place in the first place. That's why people feel betrayed. that he talks the talk, but when it comes down to it, he's continuing Bloomberg's legacy of displacing our communities. And so I just want to reiterate that we encourage everyone to come out this Wednesday to the citywide rally in front of Gracie Mansion at 88th Street and East End Avenue from 4 to 6 p.m. And the contact information is, you can find us at peoplefirstnyc.org, and you can call us at 212-358-0295.
Do that a little slower, that phone number again,
sure.
Wendy.
It's 212-358-0295.
And that's also in case you can't make Wednesday. You've got to get involved. This is really the spoke on the wheel. These folks have really acted as the fulcrum for organizing in a really meaningful way to break the iconoclast, to break these notions that this is a city to be reclaimed for the well-to-do, and the rest of us are there at best to provide services, unless even we are dislocated in that process. Well, then we'll have to, I guess, come in from Jersey and then we'll have to fight about transportation, right? Well, a little poor Yuma there, but...
And this is really part of a revolt throughout the city. And, I mean, like Gail Brewer, for one, in Manhattan, initially came out supporting it in some kind of way, and then she threw her support to de Blasio. And I don't know, where's Margaret Chang in the city council
Margaret
district?
Margaret Chang, hmm.
Yeah. And where are all the... Try to contact your city council people, because they're going to start coming down, maybe making some cosmetic changes to the de Blasio proposal, but not really fighting it.
Well, I think it's really the city planning commission that does or doesn't make the fundamental things, but always good to have a city council person tagging along, but...
No comparison to
the sisters here and the work that they're doing, and to seeing hundreds of people from the communities out there who are going to alter the power paradigms. Right, Sophie?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to kind of reiterate as we wrap up that to your question of, like, you know, what's wrong with the communities that we have right now? Why is it that these luxury developers, or the thinking is that these luxury developers have to come in and develop and improve? And if you really think about it, what are the communities that are being targeted for displacement right now? And they're communities of color. And who built those communities? And that's people of color. And these are the people we're uniting and coming together to really focus on de Blasio, because the buck stops with him. And across the city, we do need everyone to come together to fight this displacement and fight this racism.
Well, I'm not letting you end without a multilingual chant. Now, okay, I've gotta, you know, I'm pretty good on some of the ones in English, but let's take it. We need a unity of purpose here. We need a Spanish chant and we need a Mandarin chant. Okay, let's do two chants. Give it to us. We got to join in. We got to get this listenership here on the move. Who's going to take it first? Look at them looking at each other in utter...
Other languages.
Okay.
反对 歧视, 要低收入房子, 要求巴西好沙台, 反对 歧视, 现在...
Well, you'll do one in English, Sophie.
Okay. We will not be moved.
No, no, let's move on.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
That was very good. Yeah. And what was your translate for us, Wendy?
Stand against racism. Take a stand against de Blasio displacing our communities.
And wait to hear it Wednesday at Gracie Mansion with a multiplicity of voices. But really, sisters and brothers, whose city? Our city. And it is being gobbled up fast by voracious developers, aided and abetted by the policies of the de Blasio administration, which are a continuation of the policies of the Bloomberg administration in Brooklyn, certainly Red Hook, Williamsburg, Crown Heights, Bed-Stuy. I mean, they're virtually gone now. Let's make sure we save East New York, which is next on the inclusionary zoning list, and all our other neighborhoods. I want to thank our dear guests, our wonderful activists, Wendy Chung, member of the Coalition to Protect Chinatown, and the Lower East Side and Chinese Staff and Workers Associations, two of my favorite organizations, and Sophie Di Benedetto, who is a member of the Coalition to Protect Chinatown and the Lower East Side and National Mobilization Against Sweatshops, and Joanne, get them out there, and thanks for all the work you do, and Jay Fong, it's a fabulous organization that really has provided leadership and acts as a fulcrum for the rest of our neighborhoods to get involved and to save them for the people who built those neighborhoods. Thanks. Thank you. Been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Ken led us in the chant, thoroughly delighted of No Los Moveran, because that's also a segue to our wonderful demonstrator, activists, educators, the teachers of Puerto Rico, the teachers union, which is fighting austerity. And we're going to find out so much more about what they've been up to and what they've been up to when faced with the horrific austerity plans, the potential bankruptcy of Puerto Rico, and the otherwise horrific money that is pouring in and is being exploited by the hedge fund developers. And with that, Mercedes Martinez, who's the president of the Teachers Federation of Puerto Rico, how's the weather down there?
Well, weather is great down here in the 70s.
Oh, you spoiled person. But unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because it's a little scary, New York's about to catch up to you. We've been told on Christmas Day that it's going to edge up to 70 or 71 degrees. So take that, you climate deniers, climate change deniers. But indeed, let's begin with telling us about who the Teachers Federation of Puerto Rico is and what are the fundamental issues that you are dealing with.
Well, the Federación de Maestros de Puerto Rico is a rank-and-file union-based union that unites teachers from all of our islands here in Puerto Rico. And we are struggling the same struggles that our brothers and sisters in the States are giving right now against austerity measures. Right now, today, we went to court to fight for a Christmas bonus that the government is supposed to give us and is taken away from us. We are facing the possible closure or shutdown of more than 600 schools, the privatization of 15% of our schools. They want to implement a new teacher evaluation system using 20% of the students' standardized testing test scores to apply it in order to lay off thousands of teachers in our country. So definitely we are giving a huge struggle united with other teacher organizations here in our country to fight back and to win, obviously.
Now, things are obviously going to get a lot hotter after the new year when the large $1 billion debt comes due. But let's talk a bit about recently how you've been fighting all of these cutbacks that have occurred in the last months. And while I don't want to get back years because we could talk for hours because you have a very militant union which has been protesting for years. But how have you been protesting in the last, say, 6 months against the cutbacks? What form of the cutbacks taken, and what kind of alliances have you had, especially with the students and the teachers and the parents?
Well, I became the president right now in July this year, but have been in the union for many years. This semester we faced, in August 23rd, we did a march. Hundreds of teachers were marching through the streets of San Juan. In September, we did another march with a lot of unions from all around our country. On October, with the General Assembly of the workers in our country to develop a plan to fight back as a class. It is a class struggle, so workers from the energy department, water department, and different employees and workers all around our country gathered together to develop a plan to fight back together. In November, we had a one-day strike with other teacher unions. It's called the Frente Amplio and Defensa de la Escuela Pública, where different teachers unions got together and joined together to fight back against the austerity measures that I talked about at the beginning. And right now we did a civil disobedience on the 11th of December with your teachers unions. On the 16th, we did another civil disobedience in the Department of Treasury, claiming it was ours. And today we were reunited with the subsecretary of education fighting against the punitive teacher evaluation system they want to apply in our country and opposing to it. So we've been keeping very busy, but particularly we've been visiting schools, organizing the teachers, organizing the students, the parents, and all the communities, because we have to fight together as an entire community. Public education is not a thing that you can only leave to teachers. All the community has to get involved, so we're working hard on getting all the parents, students, teachers, and other personnel that work in our schools together to fight back against this.
Mercedes, let me ask you how you would describe the conditions of on the island at this point. I should say it was rather interesting that at this past weekend, there was a three full page in the New York Times about the economics on the island of Puerto Rico and the ravenous, exploitative monies that are coming in and how they are being used by hedge fund developers, among others. How do you help us understand the cost, the expenditures, really the evolution of the debt, which, of course, is going to affect yourself as a worker, as a teacher, and the character of education on the island? Tell us more.
Well, as of the 70s here in Puerto Rico, they created an operation called Operación Manos a la Obra. And in that operation, they converted Puerto Rico to a tax haven island to all the hedge funds, developers, and foreign companies. What they do is that they come here to our country and they are tax-free. They win and make earnings and profits over $35 million, $35,000 million per year in our country in profits, and they don't pay any taxes for the profits they make. So the government has recurred to put the country in debt, taking loans at high interest, plus corruption, And that has ended in this crisis of more than $72 billion that are owed right now in our country due to these tax credits and that has been given to all of these foreign companies, developers, and hedge funds throughout these years. For our union, we have no debt. Our country has been exploited for more than 100 years of colonialism, so we don't owe a penny to anybody in the world, and we shouldn't pay back for what they've taken from us. Millions of dollars per year have gone from our country. People are being exploited in their works, giving them harsh working conditions. And now they expect the workers to pay for the crisis that the capitalist and neoliberal government has created in our country. And that is totally unacceptable. We have proposed to the government many, many times at least to send, to make a 10% tax to all these foreign companies and the crisis will be solved. But they do not want to touch the rich. They want to impoverish the working class because that's how capitalism works. And they want to impoverish us and leave us without any rights. That's why the workers have to unite together because this is not one sector that's been affected. It's the entire people from our country that needs to stand together because all of us are feeling these austerity measures that the government wants to impose. So the only thing that we can do to fight is to fight back the struggle against this in order for us to obtain a victory.
You mentioned a 10% tax. I mean, frankly, I think it should be more. But what are they paying now?
Right now they're paying, if they're paying, 2%.
Yeah. All right. 10% is better, but let's try 20, okay?
I think she said 2%.
No, they're paying 2% now. She wants
2%, 10. Yes.
I want 20.
Excuse me. Well, I understand
what we
that.
We want, what we get.
And
this is a tax-free paradise for all the hedge funds. I agree with you. It should be more than their percent. But even if they would only pay that little bit of amount, the problem of the supposed crisis would be resolved.
Well, this is not just the hedge funds. The corporations are paying almost no taxes also, like Walmart.
Walmart, Walgreens, Sears, all those foreign companies that come to our country and people here pay more. It's impossible for the workers to be paying an 11.5% sales tax on their salary. And we have these big corporations paying 2% and making millions. It makes no sense. You know, right now, a lot of parents have not been able to buy the Christmas gifts for the children because the Christmas bonus has not been paid. That's why today we had to go to court. We sent an injunction and we're waiting for a court decision in favor of the workers because they've taken this too far. And obviously we need to organize our communities because this is only going to get harder after January when they're threatening to close the government because they're saying there's no money to pay the workers. They want to continue imposing these measures that are going to leave the working class in complete poverty. And definitely what we're doing and other unions are doing is the right thing and the right way to go. We have to go to every school. We have to go to every teacher. We have to go to every parent, every worker, every citizen that's been affected by this alleged crisis that we have to pay, that we have no fault, and it's not our problem. We are clear that this debt is not ours.
We are
clear that we owe nothing. So we should not pay a cent, and the workers are claiming for justice.
And I want to let our listeners know that we're speaking with Mercedes Martinez, president of the Teachers Federation of Puerto Rico. And one of the things I wanted to ask you was, you mentioned earlier the issue of privatization. Now, we see the advance of privatization here in the form of charter schools and much of other services in Puerto Rico are increasingly moving in the direction of privatization. But what does privatization look like, and who is advocating for that in terms of the education system in Puerto Rico?
Well, right now in Puerto Rico, all the public schools are public. In 2008, the Federación de Maestros went on a strike. The union was the exclusive representative of all teachers, and that strike got us decertified. But for us, it was more important to go to the street and fight against the implementation of charter schools in our country and to obtain teachers' rights than to be the exclusive representative. That attack has been vivid after then, year after year, where these big companies want to take over the control of our schools and administer our schools, creating charter schools. Right now we have no charter schools in our country, and there's a bill going on in the Senate. Right now they're in recession, but in January the session goes back again. And it's called Plan Batia, it's project number 1456. It was already approved by the Senate. Now it's going to the House of Representatives. And what they want to do is they want to create charter schools in 15% of our current schools. According to them, those should be the schools that achieve the lowest in the standardized testing. And for us, that's totally unacceptable. And the beauty of this is that they may approve it by January. And they may have their 5 minutes of glory, but in April, when those tests come, teachers have to prepare for a strike. And if April comes and no teacher gives a test, and students don't take the test, they will not be able to point the schools as failing schools when they're not. They will not be able to point a finger against teachers. And that way they will not be able to put that 20% on the teacher test scores, or the 7% on our students' test scores of the general, their average and promedio. And that way, even though they may apply, they may approve the law, it goes hand by hand with the flexibility plan. And now the No Child Left Behind has been reauthorized by the ESA Act. But they can approve whatever they want. But if April comes and we are able to organize this, and we are able for the test not to be given, they will not be able to implement whatever laws they approve. So more than betting on that this is not going to go and pass in the House of Representatives, we are preparing for a huge struggle in our country, because the existence of public schools are in threat. We've seen what's happened in the States, where thousands of schools have been shut down, where thousands of teachers have been laid off, all because of the standardized market and corporate reformers that see in our children money from these debts. And we are definitely not going to have it. It's going to be a huge struggle, and it's definitely going to take a strike for the teachers to fight this back in order for us to prevail.
Well, let's move to January, which is a little bit closer also, because in January 1st, the more than $1 billion debt is due, and there may be more cutbacks, and you mentioned even possible government shutdown. So what kind of alliances are being made now? What are some of the plans for January?
Well, right now we're part of an alliance called Coordinadora Sindical, and that alliance has union members and of different classes. It has the OTED, it has Prosol, workers that work on public transportation, hospitals, hospital workers, teachers, all the different unions, progressive unions, rank and file unions that have fought for the workers' rights in our country and have a history of fighting against this neoliberal agenda. So what we're doing is that we're uniting, because definitely it's going to take more than one union to fight back against all these cuts that are being threatened against our people. We celebrated an assembly, a national assembly in October, and we approved there that we were going to work for a general strike in all of our country. But obviously, in order for the government to hear us, it cannot be a one-day strike. It has to be indefinite. And that takes a lot of organization to do so. That's why we are having meetings regularly on a weekly basis, seeing where every union is, giving labor classes, labor schools, creating labor schools in our union for all of our members, because we have the only way to organize workers is going and talking to them directly, meeting with them, sitting down with them, explaining to them what's happening, hearing what's happening, and together working for options. Obviously, we have to develop a class conscience to the workers, and that's a huge amount of work that we are having in our union and all the other
Mercedes
at the same time.
Let me just query in the minute or two that we have left. Ken said your union, the Teachers Federation of Puerto Rico, is more militant. They've been involved in lots of strikes. You use the term progressive, and indeed you talked about neoliberal agendas and colonialism. What do you think the function of your union is? As it is it merely a bread and butter consideration in terms of austerity, or do you see it having a power relationship in the working class, having through its organizations such as unions a much more a strategic determination over the events and how things unfold in Puerto Rico and for the class?
We have in the Federación de Maestros de Puerto Rico, we have the executive committee. Most of all, most of these members have a big influence by socialism. So we have a huge responsibility among our shoulders to develop class conscience in the people of our country and the workers. We have a big role in the struggle that we're going to have next year. We definitely have to work hand in hand with the other union members together, but it's definitely going to take a huge movement in our country to fight back. We cannot rely on politicians. We cannot rely on political parties. The only thing that we can rely is in ourselves, in our workers, in organizing together to fight back any political party that is going to come to power, because they all do the same thing. They respond to the same capitalist people and movement. So we definitely have a big role and a strategic role in our country to develop this class conscience so the workers can see that it's not an attack on one sector, but it's an attack on an entire country.
And we're going to... We're going to have to leave it there as we ready ourselves for the next program that is in the House, Housing Notebook. Mercedes Martinez, president of the Teachers Federation of Puerto Rico. Do you have a 30-second chant for us? We're into chants this evening. Can you give us one of the favorite chants of the Teachers Union, and we'll take it out with that?
Sure. We have a chant that says, "No hay triunfo sin lucha, ni lucha sin sacrificio."
Say that one more time and then do a translation.
Okay, it says, "No hay triunfo sin lucha, y no hay lucha sin sacrificio." Triunfo sin sacrificio. That means there is no hay triunfo sin lucha. There's no triumph without struggle, and no struggle without sacrifice.
What a note to end on. Indeed, there isn't. And we'd like to thank you again for joining us. We'll continue to keep our listeners posted as things develop and possibly leading up to a general strike in Puerto Rico. We've been speaking with Mercedes Martinez, president of Teachers Federation of Puerto Rico. This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.